following is a conversation in a series of podcasts discussing topics and issues dealing with high technology crime and digital evidence recovery. These podcasts are presented by SEARCH, the National Consortium for Justice Information and Statistics. This series is made possible through funding from the Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance.
Thank you for joining us in a discussion about peer-to-peer investigations. I'm Elizabeth Tao, a high-tech crime training specialist at SEARCH. Here to share his expertise is Sergeant Anders of the Bedford Sheriff's Office. Before we get started, I'd like to have Sergeant Anders introduce himself.
Thank you, Elizabeth. My name is Steve Anders. I'm a sergeant with the Bedford County Sheriff's Office in Bedford, Virginia, and I'm currently assigned to the Special Investigations Division, which administers the Southern Virginia Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force here in Virginia with approximately 118 affiliate agencies.
Thank you, Sergeant Anders. The challenges of investigations come on many levels, and peer-to-peer investigations offer their own unique circumstances. These investigations present additional challenges and issues to all involved. You see this firsthand on many levels. As part of the investigative team, what issues do you encounter regarding peer-to-peer investigations?
There could be a couple different issues that we face. Sometimes in the community, there's this misconception that we are entrapping people, that we are somehow illegally hacking into their computers and getting these private files that they don't want anyone to see. Sometimes with government elected representatives, it's the same misconceptions. So one of the challenges we face is just educating the public that, you know, what we're doing is not violating the Constitution in any way, shape, or form, that we're basically gathering publicly available information that anybody, including the general public, has access to and can find. From a prosecution standpoint, some of the challenges that we face occasionally, and not so much anymore as more of these cases are coming through the courts and the prosecutors are becoming familiar with them, but some prosecutors are just intimidated by the technology. So they were hesitant to take these cases because they weren't sure that they would understand how everything worked and they didn't feel that they could properly prosecute them.
Can you explain a basic peer-to-peer investigation?
Sure. Peer-to-peer or P2P is basically one person's computer talking to another person's computer. Most people are familiar with peer-to-peer in the sense of downloading music or movies. Napster was one of the original early downloading networks. There was a central server set up, but now the networks that we have out there, such as Nutella, eDonkey, and the like, are just millions of users connecting to each other, hence the term peer-to-peer. And what they do is a user downloads the software from the internet, puts it on their computer to be able to connect to the network. And they start typing in keywords for content that they're looking for. And then the network will respond back with a list of people that are online that have files with those keywords in them. And then you can start choosing which ones you want to download. So whether it's music, movies, or pictures, or what have you, that's what's out there. We know through our experience that people participating in the distribution and collection of child pornography use these peer-to-peer networks to exchange files with one another. So we simply go out on the network with the same type of software that the public would use, and we can start asking for people that may have child porn files, asking what they have, and then we get a response back, and then we start trying to download those files to confirm that they are indeed child pornography.
I know there's many networks available. Can you talk about a few that you see suspects using?
Sure. Probably the most widely known one in most recent years was LimeWire, and that was actually what we call a software client. That was a piece of software that accessed the Nutella network. Government kind of shut that down. There's older versions still out there. But the Nutella network itself is still up. There are other clients that can get on it. eDonkey or the ED2K network is still pretty big. We see a lot of activity on that. Aries is another network that's up and coming that we're starting to see an increase in activity as far as child pornography is concerned. Then you've got different torrent sites, and GigaTribe is another hybrid of a peer-to-peer type with social media. So there is a multitude of peer-to-peer type networks out there, and law enforcement, we're out monitoring all of them and working cases on all of them.
Can you describe what an image or video library is and how that pertains to the peer-to-peer investigation?
Sure. When we have an investigation, we obtain child pornography from a suspect's computer, or after we do a search warrant at a a suspect's house and get the computers and devices that they may have child porn on. And any child pornography that we find, we then will put into, or what we call is an image library, back at our secure office. It's a secure server that just has all the pictures and videos that we find. And that's important because if we're starting to download a child porn file or suspected child porn file from someone on one of the peer-to-peer networks, but say we're not able to download the entire file, we could lose the internet connection, they could get offline, they could delete the file or move it, but for some reason we can't get the whole file. If we have a copy of it, we may be able to view the partial file that we downloaded and compare that to the full file, that, and that would help us confirm that, yes, this was indeed an actual picture or video that depicted child pornography. So it's sort of a backup. It allows us to confirm what we suspect this person may have in the event that we're not able to get a full, complete download from them.
Do all agencies have one of these, or is this specific to certain agencies?
I can't say that every agency has them. When we train investigators from different agencies to do these type of investigations, it's one aspect that we talk about in class, and that we highly encourage them to do this and to build them for that very purpose. Occasionally, you know, some of your smaller agencies may not have the resources to do that. Sometimes they may not have a copy of the file that they're downloading from a suspect, and so they may reach out to us or another agency on the task force to see if we might have a copy of it. And if we do, then we're able to get it to them so that they can review it to confirm that it's part of the same file that they were trying to download. So it's something that we do encourage, and we try to get all our agencies that have been through the training to do, but I can't say definitively that every single one of them has actually ended up doing this.
As you just mentioned, training is very important on many levels. What kind of training do investigators receive?
Well, for our purposes here in Virginia, the classes that we teach through our ICAC program, we have a peer-to-peer class that is approximately 4.5 days, runs Monday through Friday on noon. We'll have investigators come in, and we teach them how the networks work, the history of the networks. We teach them how to go out and find the software programs to download them, have them installed. That way they know exactly how a suspect would get to the point where they're downloading child pornography themselves. So they go through the whole installation process, connecting to the networks, doing keyword searches, downloading child porn. And we do that so that they can testify that they can get this child pornography the same exact way that our suspects get the child pornography, by downloading it from other people on the networks. We teach them how to document, preserve the evidence, how to capture records to help identify who the suspects are that they're downloading the child porn from. We teach them how to write their legal process, whether it's subpoenas or court orders or search warrants, depending on the type of records they're trying to get. And then how to, once they're there on the search warrant, how to collect certain types of evidence and preserve it so that when they can get it back for forensic examination, it's in the best physical shape possible. So, you know, we don't want to damage a hard drive or a computer in transport and then lose any evidence that might be on there.
As with other cases, peer-to-peer cases involve a lot of additional people, be it the courts, judges, prosecutors. What kind of training do they get, and are there options for them?
Absolutely. We've actually had several prosecutors sit through our classes, and we encourage that. We'll go out to Commonwealth Attorney's offices here in Virginia and put out the offer that we've got this training up. You can go through it with the law enforcement officers. You can get the same hands-on experience, not that you're going to go out and build a case for prosecution, but so that you have the most complete understanding you can of how the officer has downloaded the child porn, how the case is built, and then just how the technology works. So when you get into court and you start arguing the case before a judge or a jury in the defense, that the prosecutors can be confident in what they're doing and how they're approaching the prosecution because they actually know how it works because they've done it in our classroom with us the same way that the law enforcement officers do. I haven't really had any classes with judges, though we've spoken at a couple events and conferences for some judicial officers and magistrates. So we just try to give them some education on how some of the technology works. So if someone comes before them seeking a search warrant or a court order or subpoena, they're not trying to learn it all there on the spot. They already have an idea of what to expect, and they understand to a degree what they're reading in the affidavits or probable cause statements.
For those individuals that are part of the investigation that may not have as many resources as you do at your hands, do you have any additional resources that maybe you're able to help them or new investigators that are dealing with peer-to-peer cases?
Sure. The number one thing they can do is become part of an ICAC task force in their state. Their agency isn't already part of an ICAC task force, you know, talking to their chief or their sheriff, their command staff about doing that is probably the best thing they can do. Because once they're on the task force, they have access to the training, they have access to the resources and the expertise of those agencies that have been on it and have the experience. You know, we do forensic examination support. We've got a full lab here in our office where we can provide computer forensics for all the agencies on our task force. And our guys, that's all they're doing is child porn examination. So, you know, they're pretty good at what they do and, relatively speaking, can move pretty quickly through sifting through all that evidence for them. So in this time of tight budgets and fiscal responsibility, you know, it's a great resource to have a lot of this free training through the task force program that your officers can get trained and have all the logistical support as needed to work these investigations from beginning to end.
Sergeant Anders, thank you so much for your time today. In closing, I'd like to get any final thoughts you may have regarding the future of peer-to-peer investigations.
Well, they're constantly changing. You know, new technology comes out. The bad guys are always a step ahead of us. We're always learning how they're using emerging technology to exploit children. And in a sense, we're playing catch up. You know, one of the things that I see coming on the horizon is the switch from the service providers from IPv4 to IPv6. And that's just something that we're going to have to learn and adapt to and start incorporating into our investigations. As new software comes out, new networks, you know, we'll have to locate them, find out where the bad guys are going to transfer and distribute their child pornography and just modify our investigations to accommodate that. And we'll always be there biting at their heels, so to speak.
Great. If anybody has any questions regarding peer-to-peer investigations, can they contact you? And if so, can you provide that information?
Sure. The easiest way to get a hold of us here is through our website, and that is www.sovaicac.org. Again, it's www.sovaicac.org. And there's contact forms there that they can get a message to us and someone monitoring that, and we'll get back to them shortly.
Great. Thank you again for your time and all the hard work that you guys do out there.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for taking the time to join us for this conversation. This project was supported by Cooperative Agreement number 2009-BEBX-K030 with the Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance. Points of view or opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the guest and moderators and do not necessarily represent the official position or policies of the U.S. Department of Justice. From all of us here at Search, thank you for listening to this podcast. We hope you will join us again for another edition of Search's High Tech Crime Podcast Series.